Good evening, good morning. Thank you for tuning in to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening. My name is Dave Schrader. Tonight, Angels versus Demons. We'll be talking about both of these characters. Angels in the first section of the show. We'll also be opening up phone lines. I want to hear your encounters in hour two. Have you ever encountered an angel, angel intervention? What do you believe it would be like to come face to face or in direct contact with an angel? We'll take your calls and talk about it then. In hour three, demons, the demonic realm, exorcisms, possession, oppression, and more. We'll find out what the reality and the fact from fiction is of that. Then in the fourth hour, we'll open up phone lines again, and we want to hear your stories. Have you ever encountered something you believe may have been a possessed person, a demonic? Our guest this evening joining us is an expert in this field and has spent a good part of his life trying to understand both sides of the same coin. He's also involved in psychology and has worked with many different cases. So tonight we'll hear from him, get his opinions, weighing in on angels versus demons. Adam Bly is our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Adam Bly is a modern religious demonologist who trains priests in exorcisms at the national level. He works with the Roman Catholic Church in exorcism and religious demonology, as well as an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists. He has a master's in adult clinical psychology and has worked in forensic and community clinical settings. He's performed hundreds of psychological evaluations and worked with the full range of mental illnesses. Tonight, Angels versus Demons with our guest, Adam Bly. Adam, welcome back to Coast to Coast.
Hi, Dave. It's nice to hear your voice.
It's great to hear you as well. Thank you for joining me this evening. I wanted to chat with you about this because this is something I feel that, you know, so many people are intrigued by the encounters and by what people perceive angels and demons to be. So let's focus in this first part of the show regarding the angelic realm. There's so much bandied about regarding terms like guardian angels and watchers, archangels. First of all, with the theology and the biblical context of angels, explain a little bit to me how these different realms work in these hierarchies, if you will.
Sure. Our understanding, both biblically and through experience of interacting with them in some cases, is that these are spiritual beings. They were created before the physical creation. So these are not people that were nice and died and became angels. They've always been there. They're always going to be there. And there's nine ranks of them. And we can think of it like a military organization, you know, with privates moving up to officers, etc. And as these ranks go up through the nine ranks, they get closer and closer to God. And how we think about that, you know, we're not really sure, except, you know, in my mind, it's interesting to think about string theory. There might be some correlates with modern physics that might help us just have an analogy for it. But basically, the higher ranked ones are closer to God, and the highest are actually in the direct presence of God. Now, the angels are at a rank where they actually interact with humans on a more regular basis. And then the higher ranked angels usually don't. It's very rare. So the seraphim is a word that a lot of people have heard. And that's actually the name for the highest rank of the angels that's actually in the presence of God. And biblically, we only see them interacting with people in a very limited way. We also, in the lives of the saints, for instance, St. Francis, that our current pope is named after, St. Francis received the stigmata when a seraphim angel came to him. So, you know, we see some interactions. The regular angels, guardian angels, that, you know, in our common terms, they're with us all the time, and then the higher-ranked ones are more sent for special occasions.
All right, now you say that they interact with us all the time. Do you mean this in a hypothetical or a theoretical sense, or do you mean legitimately angels are with us and surround us at all times?
I mean literally. Now, most people don't see them. It's actually not uncommon for small children, particularly children that have gone through a serious illness, to report later that they saw this other person, and it'll usually seem to be a person to them, comforting them and staying with them. Sometimes people that are in very bad accidents or go through a very severe illness will have an experience of being able to see or perceive them. But it's our understanding that they're always there helping us, just like the other side is always there tempting us. Our guardian angel is always there encouraging us and protecting us. It's just, it's usually not something that we're allowed to see. But
well, then let me ask you about that as guardian angels then, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all hear that we have guardian angels. Now, there's some conflicting information out there regarding guardian angels, that they are there, but because of our free will, they will not always intercede or act like a guardian unless we ask them to. Is that true? Do they just stand back idly and watch us, hoping that we will call out for their assistance? Or how does that work?
Well, there's a little truth to that. So the one of the primary differences between the good side and the bad side is the issue of free will. So God never forces himself on us, and an angel, of course, is an extension of God's will. So God is never going to kind of kick down the door and say, Dave, you're absolutely going to do this. You don't have any choice. God always wants us to turn back in love and as a free choice to love God and take care of our neighbor and do good things. So the holy angels, they're not going to force us to do good. And they're also not going to intercede in extraordinary ways, usually, without us asking for it. So I'm not saying that if you ask for it, suddenly light's going to flood the room and, you know, choirs are going to sing and all of that. But I'm saying that when it comes to struggles in life, it is good to say, and I wouldn't get into naming your guardian angel and trying to have dialogue with them, because they don't talk to us as a rule, and we can explain that later. But it is important to ask them to help, because that gives them more free rein to intercede for us, to help us, to comfort us in ways that they normally would kind of stand back, because they don't want to violate our free will.
All right. Engaging with guardian angels, having guardian angels, the belief in the heavens and you know, and in hell. Let me ask you this. As somebody with a psychological background, you know, I know a lot of people that consider themselves very academic and involved in psychology who will tell you vehemently that there is no heaven, there is no hell, there is no God. When we die, we cease to exist. We don't have angels helping us. We don't have demons on our shoulder. It is our ability to choose to do right and wrong. And when people blame the dark side or give power to that, it's simply them trying to deflect, you know, their own ability of what they've done. They're looking for a scapegoat in this.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from a psychological background that you do, Adam, how do you differentiate when somebody's mentally handicapped with this, or I don't know what the correct terminology is, so I apologize, but, you know, seeing angels or believe that they're in concert with angels and actually having that experience?
Yeah, and, you know, with the good side, with the holy side, it's a little bit difficult to think about. With the bad side of things, it's a little easier, because usually with what you're alluding to is, you know, people do something bad and then they say, oh, the devil made me do it, so I'm not responsible. I can say, having worked in the prison system and worked with a lot of criminals of different types, in all that time, I only met two that were explicitly involved in the occult and likely were possessed or oppressed, possibly a third one that I met right before he died. And that was out of hundreds and hundreds of people that had done really extreme crimes and things that we would call, you know, real human evil, you know, including some of the people they made movies about their cases and, you know, the extreme stuff. So I don't think the extraordinary influence is there very often. And the other thing is, Dave, we can't forget that our free will is never completely flooded and taken away, except in the case of full-blown possession, where another driver takes the wheel of the car, so to speak. So really, it's not an excuse for somebody to say, oh, I was too tempted, I couldn't resist, something else made me do this. That just really doesn't fly, because God doesn't allow our free will to be overridden. Now, we can be tempted, and we can be sorely tempted, and it can be very hard to resist these things, particularly if we've gotten involved in it for a while, whatever the temptation is.
Right, and I want to talk more about that later on in the show, mm-hmm. when we talk about the demonic realm. With the mm-hmm. angels, though, I mean, Do you ever come to terms trying to look at the science and the psychology of how we are built to want to believe in something? Do you ever find yourself in conflict or in a place of, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for here? A crisis of faith, dealing with the psychology and theology and trying to marry these two things together?
You know, I think the point that we all can imagine easily is that we all have a natural fear of our own mortality. And so from a psych perspective, I think somebody who hadn't had more experiences with the spiritual or was raised in a faith might say, well, this is a natural fear of mortality. And, you know, Freud said that, of course, the primary anxiety under all other anxieties is the fear of death, because it's the one thing we can't control, and it's inevitable, and it's, you know, we can't handle it. Our mind can't really deal with it. And so Freud would say, well, then we put something between us and this thing that we can't control, and that's where religion and the idea of God comes from. It's interesting because, you know, Freud was involved in some esoteric religious schools of thought. So a lot of psychologists are religious people, but that would be the argument, that basically it's kind of a delusion would be the argument to deal with that fear. For myself, Dave, you know, all these things boil down to what's your experience. So you can be raised in something and say, well, I've just chosen to believe this because it comforts me and I was raised in it. A lot of people, a tremendous number of people in the world, have had enough experiences through their life. It might be two or three things in their whole life. It might be a bunch. It might be one that gives them a sense of there is something more. And sometimes we hear stories from people that seem very credible and very sincere. And sometimes those also help us draw that conclusion. But really, I think, Dave, it boils down to differences of experience. You know, ultimately, my experiences are my own. I can't make you believe, you know, in the same way I do, because you haven't had the exact same experiences. And likewise, you know, I can't fully understand and just embrace your perspective because you have your own experiences. And so we kind of have to agree to respect each other, but and then also possibly listen and consider, well, this person had a different experience than me, instead of saying, well, it's impossible, that's not true because I didn't see it. Well, you know, maybe it's just that you haven't seen it yet. You haven't had that experience yet.
Well, you mentioned, as you started to talk a little bit about the demonic side and possession or interference. I'm curious, do angels possess people? Can they step in and use a human form in order to complete a task or a job here among us?
Well, I don't think that would happen because, again, God doesn't force himself on us. And since a holy angel is an extension of God's will, so to speak, it's a soldier or a messenger, I don't think that would be happening. And the other thing, Dave, is that they wouldn't need to. You know, an angel, they can pretty much do whatever God wants them to do. They could manifest in a physical way, I suppose, if God wanted them to. They wouldn't need to, though. They can affect the physical world. They can appear to people. They can intervene. So I don't think it would really be necessary.
The reason I ask is we hear so much about angels here on Earth and people that seem to appear. I've had my own experience where, you know, I believe I encountered something supernatural in an angelic way because this person was there, came out of nowhere, helped me, and then vanished just as quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes you wonder, was that an angel that just stepped in to help out in this way? How do you differentiate again between it just being happenstance and a good Samaritan as opposed to angelic intervention?
Well, I'll tell you, anecdotally, of course, I meet a lot of interesting people, you know, in the work that I do. And on the good side, it's not uncommon with these encounters that what seems to be this person that kind of steps out of nowhere and helps the person will say something or give them a clue, whisper a word or say a phrase, something that really only that person and God knows. And it's the angel's way of, in a sense, giving a wink, like to let them know who sent them. And I've heard stories like this a number of times. So, you know, there's that. And Dave, I've heard the same thing from many people where they've been in a crisis situation or something that could turn dangerous very quickly, and somebody comes out of nowhere. They often don't say much of anything, but they basically bail them out, and there's a sense that you should just be quiet and go along with it, you know, and just be grateful, and then suddenly they're gone as quickly as they came. I think that's one form of angelic intervention. I'm not saying every time somebody swoops in to save the day, it's an angel. You know, I think these things are very rare when they manifest in that way, but I think they're certainly capable of doing it.
And I wonder if that's the angel of the person that may be getting their message, right? I mean, could it be that my angel tapped me on the shoulder or whispered in my ear that caused me to careen or change my, you know, the path I was on to suddenly help this person? For, because there's a lot of people that I'll meet, including myself, where for some reason I feel, compelled to pull over or to help or do something, a complete stranger. And it just so happens I turn the corner and there's what's going on, and I was not going in that direction to begin with.
Right.
Help out and then you're on your way. Do you believe that that kind of intervention happens, or do you believe that has nothing to do with the greater scheme? It's just, again, happenstance.
Oh, no, I don't think it's happenstance at all. I think that we're all involved in an intricate, interrelated, large system. And it's kind of like the gears in a watch turning. You know, we're all affecting lots of people and being affected by a lot of people. And again, not that God is forcing us to do anything, but as we cooperate with God and we try to do our best, we will get these promptings. And I've had the same thing like you describe, where you're not sure why, you know, you're going in a certain way or doing a certain thing, or you just feel that you're supposed to, you know, react to this thing, something that's going on, and it is a prompting. And I think the more you show God that you're willing to love and cooperate and love your neighbor as yourself, I think you'll get these promptings. And whether that's the Holy Spirit for somebody that believes in baptism in the Holy Spirit, or if it's your guardian angel giving you a nudge, either way, God is orchestrating things.
We're going to, at the top of the next hour, we'll open up phone lines for people that believe that they've had angelic intervention in their life, that believe that they've actually encountered or witnessed an angel. Have you personally ever physically seen a heavenly angel?
I have not seen an angel. I have seen something invisible do physical things in a room that were good and at a direct prayer request. Specifically, I was praying with somebody that was dealing with a particular problem, and I asked the angels to help because I wasn't sure what to do. And basically, this person felt that there was a heavy thing attached to their leg spiritually, and it was weighed down and squeezing them and hurting them. And suddenly their leg was picked up like somebody was going to pull your boot off your foot. Their leg was picked up at an angle, and they were pulled across the room like somebody was tugging on their leg, not violently or hurting them, but somebody was like pulling a boot off, and because the chair they were in was on rollers, they were dragged across the room, and whatever it was spiritually was removed from them. So that was one example where immediately after a request to the holy angels to assist with what we were praying with, the person was physically pulled across the room. So that was one example. I haven't been privileged to see that. Now, I did have one photograph, and this was with a good friend, and we were at a holy shrine, and they had prayed and asked God and were asking for some kind of sign. I didn't know this. They were privately praying for some kind of sign, whether I was a good person and could be trusted at a deeper level. And I was taking some photographs, and I had no idea this person was praying this. In the first photograph, instead of the statue of Mary that I was taking a picture of, there's what looks like interwoven beautiful light of different colors, literally interwoven like bands. And Dave, it's this intricate, beautiful picture, and it was a clear day, and I know cameras well, and I had used this camera for years. It wasn't a light leak, and it wasn't me making a mistake with the camera. So, you know, and that was one case where they looked over later, and I said, "What the heck is this?" And they said, "Oh, that's an angel. I've seen one other picture of that in, you know, the last 30 years. I'll show you when we get back." And there was another picture from years ago that he had had, and it was a different configuration, but it was the same interwoven beautiful light. And by the way, as an anecdote that's kind of neat, in medieval paintings of angels, their wings, if you see them, the wings have different bands of color in the feathers of the wings. Those colors are the exact colors that are in this interwoven light in the photographs.
Adam Bly, our guest this evening on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking angels versus demons. You can find more information about our guest at his website, religiousdemonology.com, and check out his book, Possession, Exorcism, and Hauntings. We have links to both at Coast to Coast AM. Stay tuned. We've got more coming your way right after this. I will be back with you again, Coast listeners, next Friday night. We'll be talking about one of the most intriguing and well-documented hauntings in America, the haunting of the Sally House. Deb and Tony Pickman, my guests for the first 2 hours next Friday, then open phone lines. I hope that you'll be back to join me. If you enjoy the strange, the supernatural, and bizarre, then you can join me Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. until midnight Central Time, on darknessradio.com. We stream the show live from the website, so you can tune in, check it out. Right after our show, stay tuned, because George Norrie and Coast to Coast continues your journey into the strange. That's Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. until midnight Central Time. And if you visit darknessradio.com, you can be a part of our live chat that's going on tonight and be a part of that. We'll also have your questions, try to address that. If you have questions for our guests and you'd like to email them in to me, you can contact me at dave@darknessradio.com. Again, that's dave@darknessradio.com, and we'll try to incorporate those in during the conversation this evening. We're talking angels, angel intervention, and what does it really mean to us? Does this happen? Our guest for the evening, Adam Bly. We've got much more to cover. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. Adam Bly, our guest this evening on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking in this hour about angels. We'll open up phone lines at the top of the hour. If you've had an experience, we'd like to hear from you. If you have questions for our guest regarding angels in the angelic realm, that's a great point to chime in with us. When we were talking a little bit about the intervention of angels and help from that realm, Adam, a lot of people are pounding me with emails and comments on Facebook wondering about family members. Do family members that pass away, do they ever work in the capacity as a guardian or in the angelic realm to help us? Or is that a totally separate type of connection for us?
My sense of that, Dave, is that is a separate type of thing. I don't, in my experience and also theologically, it doesn't seem to me that that would be the way it would really work. The holy angels, you know, the guardian angel certainly does take care of us and intervene sometimes in our lives. But relatives, I'm a little leery of that. Basically, you know, once we're done our process of our judgment, we're either with God or you know, in the other place, hopefully not. That would be very rare, hopefully. But I don't believe that our ones that are, people that have passed on are kind of hanging out with us and doing these kind of interventions. I think that it's probably allowed by God that they come when we're getting ready to pass on ourselves, because that's such a common experience. I do think that it's possible that an angel might maybe appear to be a loved one for a small child. For instance, I just met somebody. I was giving a talk in another state, and they had had an experience. They lost both their parents when they were very young. They were a small child, and it was abrupt and tragic. And for a few years, they had the experience of hearing their mother calling their name. But it wasn't distressing. It didn't cause fear. They didn't have an inclination to talk back. It was more of a comforting thing. And it only went on for a while, and then as a young child adjusted a little bit, it stopped. Now, you might say psychologically, well, that was their subconscious, you know, trying to comfort themselves or something. But, you know, I think there's some rare cases where a guardian angel, in order to not shock a small child, might seem to take on a different form, and God would allow that kind of to help in a situation, but I don't think our loved ones are doing those kind of interventions. And particularly, Dave, I'd be wary of loved ones having dialogue with us, because that's really not allowed theologically.
Do you think in those cases that maybe angels take on the guise of our loved ones because it's easier and maybe more compelling to take a message? You know, if Grandpa appears to me and says, don't go, you know, out on Friday night, you know, I might be more willing to sit back and go, wow, what did I just have happen? And when Friday comes around and my friends say, hey, let's go on out for a ride, I might be more inclined to say, nah, you know, I think I'm going to take a pass and just stay in and watch TV tonight. However, if I see a white light or a shaft of light and the heavenly voice of don't go out this Friday, I might begin to question my own sanity. Do you think maybe that's why people have these connections with quote-unquote loved ones that have crossed over, because that will make the message more acceptable for us?
I mean, Dave, I have to say maybe, and to me, you know, it's a big maybe. And the reason that I'm hedging a little bit is we want to be really careful, because both sides can mimic, you know, our loved ones that have passed on. And we know theologically that it's really not allowed to seek out the dead for information or consultation or comfort, because you're putting another spirit before God. It's the first of the Ten Commandments you're violating. So anything that comes and says, hey, Dave, I'm your grandfather, and you know, I need to tell you these three things you have to do this week, if it's getting into situations like that, I'd say there's a yellow flag on the field, and I'd be cautious. Now, if it was a one-time thing and it was a critical moment, and, you know, it's this turns out to be really important, you know, in the next 5 seconds of your life, and then it doesn't happen again for 10 years. Well, then I would say, yeah, I'd leave the door open for that a little and say God could have allowed that because Dave would have heard it and understood it. And maybe, like you say, not just say like, oh, you know, I just had a seizure, you know, and something blew in my brain. But if it's happening all the time, I would say that's probably not an angel.
All right. I just try to understand, mm-hmm. especially, you know, I've been an investigator for the last 9 years, yeah. and speak to people that make claims of the paranormal and visitations and family, and I'm always very skeptical of the stories that I do hear. But I personally have had experiences where things have been there, loved ones have come to me with messages, always of love and of support and help, never of anything that would lead me to believe that there was nefarious, you know, underbelly to what was being told to me. Mm-hmm. But should you still be wary if you're getting a message from some other supernatural force? I know that, you know, according to the Bible, they're going to appear to us as visions of light and beauty as well, correct?
Yeah, and, you know, the biggest take-home message with this for people to consider is an angel is, you know, the name angel means messenger. If an angel delivers a message from God, it's a one-way conversation. It's not, let's play 20 questions. It's not, let's have a conversation. It's literally delivering a message, and that's it. Because they don't want to call us into a dialogue or into relying on them or turning to them. An angel, you know, scripturally and in every other circumstance in our lives, would say, don't worship me, don't be enamored with me. You know, God is the only being that you need to be worshiping. And the other thing is, it's forbidden for us to ask spirits for information. So if an angel comes, it's going to be a one-way thing. It's going to be, Dave, I want you to eat Apple Jacks this morning, and that's it. Goodbye. You know, it's not going to allow for you to say, well, you know, should I use soy milk or should I use regular milk? There's not going to be any follow-up, because it's not going to be a two-way conversation. So that would be my biggest take-home on that. Is that it's going to be brief in one way, and anything else I would be suspicious of.
Well, now there are amazing stories that have been told and passed down. I mean, you've got the miracles of Fatima and such, where people were engaged in conversation and dialogue with what they believe to be angels or Mother Mary. Mm-hmm. In those instances, do you believe that they truly were having a dialogue? Were they chosen as prophets to receive these messages? Or with your background in psychology, do you believe that these might be some sort of mental break?
Well, in the case of Fatima, you know, that one I think is has been well researched and supported, and the church has, you know, basically given that an approval. And the my sense of the people that have received genuine Marian apparitions or apparitions of Mary is they're not, my sense is they're not having a two-way conversation with her. It's more like, okay, yes, okay, I understand, okay, I'll tell them. And that's kind of the human side of it. I've watched some film footage, you know, of more recent visionaries, because, of course, Fatima happened a long time ago, where you do see their lips moving a little, but I don't think it's them asking questions. Now, you know, that being said, Dave, reading books about Sister Lucy from Fatima, she does reference that they had asked Mary some questions. They were little children at the time, too. And I think, again, with little children, I think God allows more special consideration for little kids because they don't know that much, you know. They're innocent. They don't know all the rules. And that's why when angels appear to them, they often appear, you know, in a human form because it might be overwhelming to a child, etc. So, you know, Sister Lucy referenced asking Mary a few things. And, you know, I think in situations like that, Dave, those are kind of extreme, perhaps, exceptions that are allowed. And I know that may frustrate people when I say, like, you got to be cautious, you know, and it shouldn't be two-way, but God does allow it sometimes. But really, God can do whatever he wants. And when it comes to something very extreme like that, where the miracle of the sun and the sun spun around in the sky and 50,000 people saw it, you know, and it was reported in newspapers all over the world, this type of thing where God was making extraordinary allowances. It was an exception that, the sun spun around in the sky. So if we say that that was going on at Fatima, we can also probably say, well, okay, he was allowing other exceptions too. So basically, you know, I think it can happen, but it's extremely rare.
Let me play devil's advocate here, and pardon the pun on that, but if they're making themselves known, we're supposed to have free will. We're given the word of God in Bible form. We're given the ability to believe, and we have teachers and religious leaders that are there to share this version of theology, this version of their reality, and we can either accept or deny that. Mm-hmm. Why would there continue to be messages given to some people and not to the masses? I mean, it would seem that if Mary wanted to make an impact, if Christ or God wanted to make an impact, it wouldn't be to three peasant children in Fatima. It would be to a nation. It would be to a large conglomerate of people that would get this message, see it, and take forth the message to try to make a change. Because when it's done in a small scale like that, people, and there's so much that could be said with mass hallucination, with, you know, people wanting to believe so much that they had an experience that in a sense they will it to be in their mind. And you know that you tell yourself a lie enough and it becomes a truth. Why don't you believe that they're reaching out to us on a more massive scale? Or if we truly do have free will and it's up to us to decide, why do they interfere at all trying to sway us to pass on messages?
Mm-hmm. Well, Dave, imagine if God were to pull the curtain aside and reveal in a blinding light from something the size of 1,000 suns in your living room, and you were to feel the full impact of the presence of the Father in your living room, and you were plastered to the floor by this experience, how much free will would you then have about how you live the following days of your life? You would have very little, right? Because if the holy and the supernatural were to pull the curtain aside and, you know, flood the world with this, well, there'd be no more doubt. And there would really be very little free will and choice anymore because it's like, oh, well, it's real. And, wow, I am accountable and I am being watched and loved and cared for. And I do need to think about these things. There's no more question anymore. You see, in order for there to be free will, there has to be doubt. So God can't just step out from behind the curtain because that takes away the choice and the love and the faith that's part of the human experience. And God wants us to go through this experience and make a choice of turning to God and loving our neighbors as ourselves, in spite of the fact that we have this doubt. And that's really what faith is about.
I have a question here from Tom. He says, are all angels Judeo-Christian? And if so, why? Or is it possible that the Catholic Church has appropriated something which actually exists for many faiths?
Well, it's not about appropriating something. A lot of these ideas, you know, you can find something similar. You can find these ideas in most religions, basically. So, you know, the first reference to a God figure that had lesser spiritual beings that were messengers or servants of that goes back to Zoroastrianism in Persia. And then the Jews and a number of other religions in the Middle East. Now, there's also holy kind of avatars or messengers from God in other world religions. This is not something that's specifically Christian. It's just that the labels are different. You know, it's the same with the good side and the bad side. These ideas are universal because humankind has experienced these beings, and we experience them to an extent, and we see them through the lens of our culture. And it's the same with everything else in life. So, of course, they're going to have similar ideas in every world religion because they're actual part of life. They're actually part of the universe. Personally, you know, I don't want to get into arguing about which religion is more correct. I personally am Catholic and have been raised Catholic, but also had a lot of life experiences for myself that I've seen that I think this is a really good full understanding of the spiritual world. And, you know, for myself and you know what I'm saying there. But these ideas are universal for sure.
When we ask for angels to intercede on our behalf, can people use that as a crutch as well? You know, does that become a burden to the angels, or do they, is that what they're waiting for with our free will of asking for help?
Well, I would certainly encourage people to, and we're not saying pray to an angel. Just ask them and say, you know, guardian angel, if you don't have faith, if you're not sure, say, you know, God, I'm not sure if you're there. I'm not sure if I have a guardian angel. But if I have a guardian angel, please help me. Help me to see more of what's going on here. What is the spiritual life? And, you know, is this all real? Don't expect light to flood the room and the choir to sing. But ask them to help in whatever way. And if you do believe in God and angels, again, ask them and say, hey, you know, I give you permission. Help me more in my life. You know, help me with this decision. Help me with this temptation. Help me with, you know, loving other people more. For sure, we want to ask them, because the more we ask them, the more they have the legal right and the license to do for us. Again, God doesn't want to violate our free will and push himself on us, and so the angels aren't going to do that. The bad side, you know, will push as hard as they're allowed to. They don't care. But the holy side is very respectful. You know, one of the cliches is God is a gentleman. So the good side is never going to push themselves on you, so you do want to ask them for help. Now, they are going to help. I'm not saying that they're not going to do anything or lift a finger unless you ask. No. They're going to do whatever God wills them to do, and they're helping us all the time. They're encouraging us. They're defending us all the time. We just don't see that fight that's going on.
We have just about a minute left in this segment. Do they ever turn their back on us? Do you believe that we may get to a point where even the guardian angels say, or the archangels say, we're not going to fight on behalf of this person anymore?
No. The guardian angel assigned to you was with you from the moment of your conception and is with you at your personal judgment and never abandons you.
All right. Our guest this evening, Adam Bly. Now, we are talking to Adam from his perspective, being involved in the Catholic Church, and his views of this topic. He has extensive background in dealing with the angelic and demonic realm. We're going to talk more about the demonic realm in Hour 3. We're going to open up phone lines In the next segment, we want to hear from you. If you've had an encounter, an enlightening moment that you believe that something interceded on your behalf, you've seen something, witnessed something, heard something that you believe to be angelic, call us and let us know. If you have more questions for our guest, feel free to give us a call and share. We'd love to hear from you about that as well. And if you'd like more information about our guest and about his book, check out his website, religiousdemonology.com. That's religiousdemonology.com. His book, Possession, Exorcism, and Hauntings. Stay tuned. We've got so much more to cover on the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM.